The Sabbath and the End, Commentary for the May 20th, 2023 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11. When I was a young boy of 8 or 9, I came to a point in my life when I thought it inappropriate to be submitting to the kisses and cheek pinches of various visiting aunts and grandmothers. I let it be known that I was too old for that nonsense and turned away from any such efforts. They didn't try such hijinks on my dad, so they better not try them on me. Of course, these were merely expressions of love. Expressions I had happily received when younger, but now that I had matured, they were only burdensome to me. Later, with further maturity, I discovered that such feminine expressions of adoration could be delightful, but for the moment I was intransigent about hugging, kissing, and especially cheek pinching. What does this have to do with the Sabbath? Like me, when I thought I didn't need love in my life, we tend to devalue the acts of love toward us that the Bible records as coming from God. Although there is no mention of Sabbath in the Bible until Exodus, Exodus relates it to the seventh day of creation, identifying that day as the initial Sabbath. When we consider creation week, two things are striking. First, we are told that God rested. Why would a being of limitless power need rest? He didn't. But we can find a clue in the first chapter of Genesis. We were made in God's image, and immediately after we were created, he modeled what that image was through the rest he took on the Sabbath. Second, he presented the Sabbath to us before we had any opportunity to earn that rest through labor. Sometimes when we work hard, the rest we feel we have earned can seem especially sweet. But this rest came unearned. It was a gift, an act of grace, founded in God's love for his creation. As such, it is not simply an arbitrary anachronism we are burdened with enduring, like I had the burden of the love that pursued me through hugs and kisses by doting relatives. It is a gift that often remains unopened because we think we are too mature for such things. We reason that the Sabbath is fine for the Jews who live by the Old Testament, but for New Testament Christians there is no need to earn righteousness by observing it. The reasoning behind this thinking is that we are no longer under the law but under grace, usually referring to no longer keeping the Ten Commandments. But if we examine those commandments, we find that no one would suggest that any of the other requirements were no longer important, only the Sabbath. Why? Ironically, those who urge that Sabbath keeping is legalism and is no longer applicable for Christians have little problem pushing Sunday as being just as obligatory, despite there being no command for such observance anywhere in Scripture. If grace does away with the biblical Sabbath, why doesn't it also eliminate any obligation for Sunday keeping? Those who keep Sunday may not realize where it originated. Some believe it is kept in honor of the resurrection, and some justification for that belief may be found in later patristic writings, especially after the early second century. But the idea was never mentioned by the apostles or their contemporaries. This profound change came about because of the Jewish revolt of the early second century, also referred to as the Bar Kokhba revolt, for the man who led it, Simon Bar Kokhba. The Jews expected the Christians, whom they viewed as simply another Jewish sect, to join them in the uprising. After seeing what happened with the revolt in 70 CE and how their assistance at that time did not buy them any reprieve from persecution by the Sanhedrin, they demurred to join in. The split that occurred between Judaism and Christianity as a result was bitter. This split is well documented in the book Partings, How Judaism and Christianity Became Two, edited by Herschel Shanks. From this point, patristic literature reveals a growing anti-Semitism. When the Christian Church eventually received the backing of the secular government in Constantinople, successive church councils, especially the Council of Laodicea in the late 4th century, outlawed practices considered Judaizing, including the keeping of the seventh-day Sabbath. Notably, that council also forbade continuing the practice of ordaining women. But even though it is germane to current disputes, that is an aside to our topic. The point is that rather than honoring Jesus' resurrection, Sunday keeping was intended initially to spite the Jews and bring separation in the eyes of Rome between loyal Christianity and seditious Judaism. Most importantly, though, is a revelation that if they sought to outlaw practices such as the ordination of women and keeping the biblical Sabbath, both must have been in enough practice that outlawing was considered necessary, even in the late 4th century. While the substitution of Sunday for the actual Sabbath may be seen as a blow against legalism, it is hard to understand how an act of grace founded at creation came to be a symbol of legalism. It is as though Adam and Eve walking with God in the garden, as they were wont to do, was reinterpreted as an onerous demand of God rather than a loving fellowship the three enjoyed until they chose to listen to another. Anyone who has been through a divorce or separation knows how painful such broken relationships can be. I have no doubt that there were tears in God's voice when he came to walk with them, and when they were hiding, he cried out, "Where are you?" Perhaps he feels the same way when he fills the Sabbath with blessing, and we are nowhere to be found. Some might feel that the day does not matter, but if your friend scores tickets for a Broadway show and invites you to join them, if you show up on a different day, does it matter? Likely your friend will enjoy the blessing of seeing the show, but you won't. If we accept that the writings of the Apostle John in Revelation are apocalyptic prophecy, the three messengers of chapter 14 highlight the issues that define that apocalypse. First, there is the issue as to whether to honor God as creator. Some feel that geology and archaeology should disabuse us of that idea. I have come to believe that if that is the case, then perhaps the definition of God is too finite. While those who claim that Genesis chapter 1 is describing 6 literal 24-hour days or offering up God in the box they have placed him in, those who reject God on that basis are no less guilty of seeing him in the same box. Both are offering up straw men and rejecting or accepting that offering to suit their own purposes. Nonetheless, it is possible to accept God as creator without demanding agreement on the details. The second issue highlighted is confusion, Babel, collapsing and betraying all those who depended on that confusion for their power and authority. We tend to rely on institutions that fail us, both in the secular and the religious realm. People craving power build corporate edifices to that power and expect all to support it, either through genuine belief in the corporation's mission or through lip service to the mission, both types hoping to advance through their choice of method. Ultimately, even if they have managed to convince themselves that they are altruistically motivated, they may find themselves confronted by the third message condemning those who have sold themselves to the system instead of pursuing a relationship based on love of God and others. That third message defines the faithful as those who live in harmony with God's commands and the teachings of Jesus. The world as it exists is either greatly confused about the teachings of Jesus or rejects them outright. This does not mean that there is no one who can be defined as faithful. Elijah thought he was alone in serving God in his day, but God told him he still had 7,000 faithful. His point was that Elijah was wrong to assume that he would have knowledge of who was and who was not faithful. God is under obligation to no one to reveal all who are his until that great day of Christ's return. Even so, those who are faithful will know others who are in the same way that Elizabeth knew of the holiness of Mary's child when they met. They do not demand that God only express himself according to their understanding, even if that understanding is based on Scripture. Instead, they humbly accept him as he presents himself. Many from the Pharisees of old, to their more modern ilk, have failed to understand the compassion, mercy, and love personified in Jesus, substituting instead something that reflected the harshness and hatred of others in their own hearts. These imagine themselves winning converts to Christ, but instead create worshipers of their own false image of God. While Christ, quoting Hosea, said that God required mercy, not sacrifice, they could not see nor understand the burdensome sacrifices they demanded of people to conform to their idea of what was God's character. This is the most important aspect to understand about the biblical Sabbath. If we see it as a sacrifice of time offered to please God, we don't understand the Sabbath at all. We would just as well be spending time with God on Sunday or any other day of the week. But if we see it as a gift of grace, filled with blessings and a delight to look forward to, then we begin to understand the true character of God. Then, instead of hiding from expected wrath, we will be welcoming his presence, just as once was common in Eden. Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find the written version of this podcast, along with footnotes supporting the ideas in this podcast, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find hundreds more commentaries and podcasts at that location. May God richly bless you and your family.